not alone.
Yes, I am. I'm totally alone. Even Hua has left me.
The dragon's head moved slowly from side to side. The world is made up of five elements: earth, water, fire, metal, wood. There are five directions, five colors. There is power and strength in five.
Ping reached out to touch the dragon. She felt his scales beneath her fingers. Despite their moon brightness, they were still hard and rough to touch, but she loved the feel of them. They were as comforting as a sheepskin rug. She climbed onto the dragon's back easily, even though her hands were bound. He waited until she was safely seated and holding on tightly to one of his horns before he opened his wings and took off. The air rushed past, making her hair rustle like leaves in the wind. She could see nothing but dark, star-sprinkled sky. So many stars, it would be impossible to count them. The glowing dragon was beneath her. She didn't have to hold on. She felt calm.
"It's so peaceful up here, Dancer," Ping said. "I want to drift through the night sky forever. With you."
Heaven decides the time to live and die.
The black sky turned the color of a storm cloud, but there were no spots of rain. There was no rumbling thunder. The stars were growing dim. The sky was now the color of dove's wings. There were no stars. It was dawn. She looked beneath her. The moonlight dragon was fading. The sun rose above the horizon. Ping had to shade her eyes from its glare. Now there was nothing solid beneath her, nothing but sunlit air. The dragon had disappeared. But Ping didn't fall. She smiled to herself as she continued to fly through the sky. On her own. Light seeped through her eyelids. She opened her eyes. It wasn't sunlight, it was light from a lamp. The necromancer was leaning over her. She could smell wine, garlic, and the stench of decay. "Get up, slave girl." Ping couldn't feel her legs. Even if her ankles weren't bound, she couldn't have moved. The necromancer picked her up impatiently by the back of her gown, threw her over his shoulder, and hauled her up the ladder onto the deck. It was still night. Guards were on duty, but they took no notice as the necromancer carried her ashore. Tents had been erected on the riverbank to house the Duke and his men. Flags fluttered in the freezing night air. Some of the Duke's soldiers were gathered around a fire. They weren't interested in the plight of an insignificant girl either. The necromancer soon tired of carrying her. He dropped Ping on the ground and then dragged her by the collar. She couldn't make any part of her body work. She could only look up at the patches of starlit sky between the clouds and allow herself to be bumped along the ground like a sack of grain. The necromancer dragged her into a bamboo grove, zigzagging through the canes. Ping's body banged against the bamboo canes. The sharp young shoots speared her flesh. He stopped where the bamboo canes reached up into the cloudy night sky in a perfect circle around a clearing. He hammered two stakes into the ground. The full moon appeared in a gap in the clouds. In the moonlight, the necromancer's skin was a sickly gray. It etched dark lines on his forehead and around his nose. He looked like a living corpse. He tied her hands above her head to one of the stakes, her feet to the other. She was stretched out like a pig ready for slaughter.
The necromancer let his cape fall from his shoulders, revealing the jade vest underneath. Then he unlaced the vest and removed that as well. He gave off a smell like rotten meat. He stood before Ping, wearing only loose trousers. She shuddered at the sight of his bare, grey skin. He held his knife in both hands so that it pointed towards the sky. He closed his eyes and muttered words in a strange language. It was a spell, or it might have been a prayer, not to the 8 immortals in heaven, Ping was sure of that, but to some demon in the worst regions of hell. Ping remembered Saggy Pants, the poor dead dragon attendant, and the horrible cavity hacked in his belly. She realized what the necromancer was about to do. He was going to cut out her liver too. It must have been a ritual that was part of one of his enchantments. Strangely, Ping wasn't afraid. The dream of Dancer had left her calm. The feeling was returning to her arms and legs, but she didn't strain against the ropes. She could make out 4 marks on the necromancer's stomach. Straight lines, radiating out like dark rays from his navel. They were evenly spaced and all the same length. At first, she thought they were tattoos like the marks on his face, but the skin around them was puckered. She realized they were wounds cut into his flesh, arranged with care and precision. One was healed to a scar. 2 others were not well healed, but swollen and bruised, as if some poison beneath was trying to find its way out. The 4th was a raw wound with fresh blood still drying around it. The edges of this wound were held together with silk thread. Ping remembered the needle and thread that the necromancer had held in his hand back in the lodge. Just as she had mended the rip in Dancer's wing with a needle and thread, the necromancer had mended a cut in his own flesh. There was space on his belly for 1 more scar to complete a 5-pointed pattern. The dragon's dream words came back to Ping.
Heaven decides the time to live and die.
If this was her time to die, she was ready. Dancer had also said something about the power of 5. She didn't understand what he'd meant by that, but the old dragon's words were often a mystery to her. At least she wouldn't give the necromancer the satisfaction of watching her die in agony. She had to increase her chi power so that she could suffer the pain without screaming. The full moon appeared between the clouds again. She breathed in the moonlight. It had low levels of chi compared to sunlight, but it was better than nothing. She thought of Kai. The little dragon was the one creature she couldn't bear to leave. Jun would try to fill the role of Dragon Keeper, but he had never known Dancer. He didn't have the knowledge the old dragon had given her. She started counting the silvery bamboo leaves that surrounded her. The necromancer turned the knife in his hands, so the tip was pointing down at her, still muttering his spells. Ping pictured all the beautiful and wonderful things she had seen in her life. Dancer in flight in the moonlight, Tai Shan, Kai when he was newborn, the Garden of the Purple Dragon before it was ruined, the smiling face of her little brother. Her life had been short, but it had been exceptional. She had no desire to exchange it for the life of someone who would live to old age without experiencing those things. The necromancer raised the knife above her. The blade shone in the moonlight. Then the silence of the night was broken by shouting voices, the clashing of metal, and a high-pitched, tuneless whistle, like someone blowing hard on a flute without placing their fingers over the holes. Lowering his knife, the necromancer turned to see where the noise was coming from. Flashes of light appeared among the bamboo. Bright orange balls of flame arched high over the clearing. In another direction, an eerie purple glow moved through the bamboo. The necromancer peered into the darkness. "Who's there?" he called. There was no answer, and the racket continued. A white mist was drifting from the bamboo. The mist cloud grew quickly until it filled the clearing. The noise stopped. There was silence for a moment, and then whooping and yelling, a screeching and a squawking. Dark shapes rushed out of the bamboo, attacking the necromancer from behind and from both sides. The ground seemed to be seething with small black shapes. Through the mist, Ping saw the point of a spear, a sword, balls of flame. She heard the necromancer scream. Hope filled Ping's heart. Someone had come to her rescue. She felt her strength return. But the necromancer blocked the spear with his arm. He met the sword blade with his knife. The fireballs fell short of their mark. The necromancer passed his hand through the air, and the mist evaporated. He laughed when his attackers were revealed. Dongfang swore, and Jun was sprawled on the ground. Half of Hua's tail was missing. Kai was crouched among the bamboo canes, looking small and frightened, a wisp of mist trailing from his mouth. Ping's hope had evaporated as quickly as the mist. So this was Dancer's power of five. A girl with her hands tied, an old man, a boy, a rat, and a small dragon. The old dragon had had no idea how powerful the necromancer had become. Dongfang Swore stood up. "Take my liver instead," he said. "Why would I want your feeble old liver?" the necromancer sneered. "When I can have the liver of a young dragon keeper." Ping could hear small movements around her head. Fur and whiskers brushed against her bound hands. The ropes around her wrists began to loosen. Rats were nibbling through them. The last wisps of mist hid them from the necromancer, but Ping could see them. They were ordinary-sized rats, like the ones she'd seen on the barge. "She doesn't deserve to die," Dongfang Swore said. "Yes, she does." There was bitter hatred in the necromancer's voice. "She stole the dragon stone from me. She humiliated me at Wuchung." "This power that you get from the livers of the dead," Dongfang Swore said, "is only short-lived." The rats were now gnawing through the ropes that tied Ping's ankles. "There are plenty more livers in the Empire," the necromancer snarled. "Leave, old man. Your day is over." "I know the source of your power," Dongfang Swore said. "The liver is the house of the eternal soul, the soul that flies to heaven when someone dies." The old magician wasn't just stalling so that the rats could free her. Ping realized he was trying to tell her something. "When you cut the livers from living men and sew them into your own body..." "I've heard enough of your prattle," the necromancer said. He turned abruptly, raised his knife again, and plunged it toward Ping. She rolled out of the way, and the blade dug deep into the earth. Jun had the mirror in his hand. He angled it so that a beam of bright white moonlight shone in the necromancer's eye. He turned to attack the boy, but Dongfang Swore tripped him with the shaft of the spear. Hua ran up the necromancer's back. The necromancer let out a scream. He dropped the knife and tried to pull the rat off. Hua jumped down with the man's earlobe between his sharp yellow teeth. The necromancer grabbed what remained of his ear, blood pouring through his fingers. The necromancer turned with fury in his one eye and glared at Jun. The boy was transfixed by his stare, unable to move. The necromancer raised his hand and blasted Dongfang Swore into the air like a leaf. The old man crashed back down to earth like a sack of bones. The necromancer was stronger than the power of five.
Ping knew that she would have to face him alone, but she needed something to shield her from his awesome power. The jade vest was lying at her feet. She picked it up and slipped it on. The necromancer turned to face Ping.
"Cut him!"
Dongfang Suo gasped, struggling to his knees. "Cut the scars!" Ping dived for the knife, grasped it in her hand. She understood what she had to do. The necromancer focused his gaze on the knife in Ping's hand. It turned red hot, and she was forced to drop it.
"Iron hurt Kai," said a voice in Ping's head.
The little dragon, still glowing in the light of the full moon, was at her feet. Ping kicked the knife away.
"Don't need knife. Have Kai."
She remembered how she had cut her own flesh. She had just the tool she needed. As she bent to pick up Kai, the necromancer grabbed hold of the glowing knife and hurled it at her. Dongfang Suo lunged forward. The red-hot knife pierced the old man's chest, and he fell. Ping took hold of the dragon's left forepaw. She ran at the necromancer, and with Kai's longest talon, sliced open one of the healed scars on the necromancer's belly. The necromancer roared with pain and anger. Black blood and pus spurted from the scar. A putrid smell filled the air. He directed his power at her. It knocked her off her feet, but it had weakened and the vest protected her. He picked up Jun's sword and swung it at her. Ping focused her own power and knocked it aside.
"The other scars, Ping,"
Dongfang Suo gasped. Ping slashed another scar on his belly, and another. The stench was terrible. The necromancer sank to his knees as lumps of greenish, rotten liver oozed out of the cuts and slid to the ground. Ping saw the glint form in his eye. She crouched down to avoid his stare, scraped up a handful of dirt, and threw it into his face. His arms lashed out blindly and tried to push her aside, but his power was fading and Ping had the strength to resist. The air around him distorted as he tried to shape change, but he couldn't do it. Kai's black talon cut the thread that held together the edges of the newest wound. A piece of fresh liver was wedged in the cut. Ping hooked it out with the talon. The necromancer slumped forward on his hands and knees. A sudden unnatural gust of icy wind spiraled around Ping, blowing dirt and leaves into her eyes. The wind blew around her and through her, chilling her heart. A sound like a screech of anger filled the air. Dongfang Suo was weak, but he was still alive.
"Dig a hole, Ping," he whispered. "Quickly!
Souls that have been denied a place in heaven create the angriest ghosts.
Bury the pieces of liver."
Ping put Kai down at a safe distance and gouged a hole in the earth, scraped the grisly meat into it, and covered it over. Dongfang Suo muttered a prayer, asking the eternal souls of the angry ghosts to find their way to heaven. The screech trailed off into a sigh of relief and then faded away completely. The wind died, but the air remained icy. Ping didn't know who the necromancer's other three victims were, but she prayed they had an easy journey to heaven. Heavy clouds blotted out the night sky completely. With the moonlight gone, Kai no longer glowed. Ping hugged him close.
"Are you all right?"
He nodded.
"Batso not all right," he said.
Ping went over to the broken body of the old magician. Blood soaked the front of his gown. She looked into his eyes and knew he wouldn't live. The necromancer was still on his hands and knees. Jun looked at him with disgust.
"You must kill him," Jun said. "He will always be evil."
Ping shook her head. "No. Heaven decides the time to live and die." Dongfang Suo nodded slowly.
"What will we do with him?" Ping asked.
Let him go, the Imperial Magician said. He has sealed his fate with his own hands. The rotting flesh has poisoned his body. He will die soon enough without your assistance. The necromancer struggled to his feet. Ping could see now that it wasn't the moonlight that was responsible for the gray pallor of his skin. That was its actual color. The rotten smell wafted from his poisoned body with every movement. When he looked at Ping, there was no magical glint in his one eye, just fear and defeat. He limped off into the bamboo grove, bent and broken, like an old man. Ping crouched down beside Dongfang Suo. He is losing his life's blood, she said to Jun. See if you can find some moss to staunch the bleeding. Jun hurried off into the darkness. Don't concern yourself with me, Dongfang Suo whispered. Ping took his hand. I misjudged you, she said. I blamed you for everything. I made many mistakes. I was too afraid of losing my imperial position to oppose the emperor and his scheme to gain immortality. I didn't try to stop him when he wanted to kill you, when he started bleeding Kai. It did me no good. He still turned against me. Jun knelt beside Ping and handed her some moss. She placed it over the wound. On the barge, I heard the necromancer tell the emperor that he intended to cut out your liver. Ping had to lean close to hear what the old man was saying. I had to try and put things right. Jun wanted to help. Ping turned to Jun. I thought you wanted to be Dragon Keeper. The boy shook his head. Not when I saw what the necromancer had done to Kai, Jun said. I knew I couldn't defeat him, but I hoped you could, Ping. And you told Kai what you were planning? No. I can't speak to Kai in my head like you do. Jun hung his head and wouldn't look at her. But I lied when I said I could understand him. In the carriage, I pretended I understood what he said. My mother made up the stories about me having second sight. He finally looked up, peeping at Ping through his fringe. I'm not even naturally left-handed. My parents wanted me to have the position of Dragon Keeper. When I was small, they tied my right hand behind my back to force me to use my left hand. Don't blame them. They are poor and have many daughters. But Kai knew you were a Dragon Keeper. She turned to the dragon, didn't you? He shook his head. Boy play games better than Ping, he said. And have sweeties. Sweeties? Jun pulled something out of his sleeve. He opened out his hand. Three red berries lay in his palm. It's a trick passed down from my great-grandfather, Jun said, his head hanging lower. Dragons can't resist these berries. They will always come to you if you have some up your sleeve. I'm sorry, Ping. When Jun and I discussed what we could do, we realized that Kai understood us and could help. Hua, too. Ping had to lean close to hear him. We told Kai to tell you what the plan was. I misunderstood, Ping said. I thought everyone had turned against me, even Kai. She stroked the little dragon. I was wrong. You were very brave. It was your idea to cut the scars with your talons. Father said, use talons, Kai replied. In dream. It had never occurred to Ping that Dancer visited Kai in dreams as well.
I was ready to go with you, Ping, wherever your path lay. But that isn't possible now.
Dongfang Suo's voice was faint, his breathing difficult.
I should have tried to stop the necromancer at Twisting Snake Ravine. I followed the Emperor's orders blindly.
You gave help when it was most needed, Ping said. You gave your life. I'll never forget your part in the Power of Five.
Dongfang Suo's shallow breathing stopped.
Bye-bye, Fatso, said Kai.
Ping closed the old man's blank eyes. He died with a smile on his face. She wished she knew a prayer to help guide his soul to heaven. Jun held out the Dragon Keeper's seal to Ping.
I don't want it, she said. I'm not the Imperial Dragon Keeper. There is no Imperial Dragon. I'm keeper of a dragon born in the wild, who will live in freedom, not in captivity. You keep the seal, as a souvenir. It's the mirror I want.
Jun handed her the mirror. I'll take Dongfang Suo's body back and tell the Emperor that you have defeated the necromancer. Perhaps he'll realize that his plans to gain immortality will bring nothing but misery. Tell him that heaven decides the time to live and die, Ping said. Jun nodded. I'll stay hidden as long as possible to allow you time to escape. He lifted the Imperial Magician's body. Jun was small and skinny, but Ping realized he had strength within that she hadn't given him credit for. He adjusted his grip on the old man and then walked off into the bamboo.
Bye-bye, boy, said Kai.
The sky was growing light, though heavy clouds kept the sun hidden. Ping felt tired and weak. She had forgotten about her injuries while she was battling with the necromancer, but now she realized that she hurt all over. She heard squeaking. The rats who had chewed through her bonds had gathered together. Ping didn't understand why they didn't just run back to their home. Then she realized they were waiting. Waiting for Hua. She picked up Hua and buried her face in his soft, warm fur. She wanted to tell him not to go, to beg him to stay and help her on the next part of her journey. But she didn't.
Dancer sent you back to help me, she said. You've saved me many times, Hua. You've done your job.
She gently put Hua down on the ground. I don't know how I'll manage without you, but you should live a proper rat life, she said. Go with them. Hua ran over and joined the other rats. He looked back at Ping. Goodbye, old friend, she said. The rats scurried off, and Hua followed. Sadness threatened to overpower her, but she didn't have time to begin grieving for everyone she had lost. Not yet. She had to decide what to do next. Ping tried to remember all the times she'd dreamt of Dancer. Was there anything in his messages that would help her decide where she should go?
Kai, in your dreams, did Dancer tell you anything else?
Eat worms, the dragon said.
Worms?
Good for eyesight.
Anything else?
Not too many. Too many worms make Kai fart.
The little dragon made tinkling flute sounds. The sound made Ping's heart soar. It was good to hear the sounds of a happy dragon again.
Also said five.
Five what?
Power of five?
No, 5 upside down.
Kai's dreams of the old dragon were as unfathomable as hers. Kai raised his head so that Ping could scratch him under the chin.
But you don't like being tickled under the chin.
Do now.
She scratched the little dragon, but her fingers caught in his scales. Beneath his chin, he had 5 reverse scales, just as his father had.
5 upside-down scales, is that what he said?
Kai nodded. Ping looked closer. His reverse scales were much smaller than Dunce's.
Is there anything behind your reverse scales?
Maybe.
The reverse scales were so small that Ping wouldn't have been able to fit a finger behind them, but she could see that they were all bulging a little.
Show me what's behind your scales, Kai.
Not showing.
The little dragon looked guilty.
Please, Kai. I won't get cross, I promise.
The little dragon inserted 2 talons behind the first of his reverse scales. He pulled out a dead caterpillar and a half-eaten jujube.
Snacks,
said Kai. From behind the second scale, Kai produced the jade pendant that Wang Xiao had given Ping.
I thought I'd lost that,
Ping exclaimed. Behind the third was a gold earring in the shape of a lotus flower.
Pretty,
said Kai. Did you steal that from the princess? You're a bad dragon. From behind the fourth scale, he produced a dragon talon.
Father's,
the little dragon said.
For dreams.
Ping wasn't sure what he meant.
What's behind the last scale, Kai?
Ping asked. He pulled out a folded piece of undyed silk cloth.
What's that? Ping asked.
Don't know.
Did you put it there?
Kai shook his head.
Who did then?
Rat.
Hua?
The little dragon nodded.
Red bird carried it across ocean from father.
With trembling fingers, Ping took the piece of silk from the little dragon's talons. It was a message from Dancer. Not a dream riddle, but something she could hold in her hand. She unfolded it. In the growing light, she examined it closely.
It was blank.
She turned it over. The silk square didn't have a single mark on it. Chapter 28. A Silk Square. Ping's happiness plummeted like a ripe peach falling from a tree. Just a short while earlier, she'd had the power of 5. She and her friends had defeated the necromancer using the 5 elements. She had deciphered Kai's dream. She had found a message from Dancer. Her heart had soared. Things were finally going right. But her band of companions had disintegrated, and the message from the old dragon had proved to be meaningless. The peach of her happiness splattered and turned to pulp. Ping didn't need a magician, a homesick boy, or a dragon to tell her. She knew what she had to do. She had to take Kai to a place where no one would ever find him. The Emperor would send out guards to scour the Empire for the little dragon. Once word spread, greedy people would be willing to hand Kai over for a reward, or else sell him for his value in gold. No matter where she went, if there were people near, Kai would never be safe. The neglect of incompetent dragon keepers and selfish emperors had combined to reduce the number of dragons to 1. People had lost their chance to have dragons live among them. She and Kai would have to creep through the empire, hiding in forests,
traveling at night until they found a deserted place where no one would disturb them. Ping suddenly pictured the desolate hills around Huangling Palace. That was a place where no one chose to live. And the Emperor would never think to look for her there. She and Kai could survive on lizards and birds. She could build a shelter of branches and bundles of grass. The winters would be cold and bleak. They would have to hibernate like animals. It would be a miserable life, but it was the only plan she could think of. She remembered what Dancer had said in her dream. Those who do not leave their beds are not always safe. She had tried to seek safety, on Taishan, at Mingyang Lodge, with her family. But heaven had always guided her back to her true path. She vowed she would never stray from it again, if she could just work out which way it lay. She wanted to get Kai as far away from the Emperor as possible. For the moment, she would risk traveling by day and hope that the Emperor and his guards were too busy with Princess Yang Xin's departure to notice her. "You'll have to shape change during the day, Kai," she said. "What shape do you want to take?" The little dragon turned into a bucket, then a pot plant, and finally settled on a basket. Ping was weak, but so was Kai. She picked him up. Ping's chest hurt with every breath. Her left arm hung limp. The wound on the side of her head was bleeding again. She was weak and exhausted. She didn't know if she could carry her own weight, let alone the dragon's. Heavy clouds hung low over the countryside. It was still early, but there was a great deal of activity on the north road near the river. Word had spread about the arrival of the Duke of Yan's camel caravan, and people were arriving from nearby villages to see the creatures. Stalls had sprung up on the dock to sell food and drinks to the spectators. Ping watched from the cover of the bamboo grove as imperial guards kept back the crowd while bearers finished loading the princess's baggage, piling each camel with chests, baskets, and bags. There were also two sedan chairs that would carry Princess Yang Xin and her ladies, draped with hangings to conceal the occupants. No one was looking for her yet. As Ping stepped out onto the road, Lady An emerged from one of the tents. Their eyes met, but Lady An looked away and went on with her business. Ping had no money, no food, not even a water bag. She had lost all her belongings apart from the dragon scale and her mirror. Kai didn't ask where they were going. Ping asked a farmer with a covered wagon if he would take her to the next town. He looked suspiciously at the grubby girl with a ripped gown and blood on what remained of her sleeve. He shook his head. Ping walked slowly. She wished she felt stronger. At any moment, Kai could grow tired of being a basket and turn into his proper shape. As soon as the Emperor found out that she had escaped with Kai, a reward would be posted for her capture. Soon everyone would be on the lookout for her. Every step took them further away from the Emperor. Ping had never imagined that she would be so pleased to leave Yu Che behind her, happy that she would never have to see him again. The silk square was scrunched up in her hand. She was angry with Dancer for raising her hopes. For a moment, she'd thought she would learn something new and valuable from it. She threw the silk square onto the road.
"Keep silk!" cried a voice in Ping's head.
"What for?" said Ping. "It's useless." A merchant pulling a handcart passed them. One of the cart's wheels rolled over the silk square. The cart rumbled on with the silk stuck to the wheel. Kai suddenly turned into a goat. Ping dropped him. She looked around. Fortunately, no one had seen the transformation.
"Must get silk," Kai said.
He started to run after it.
"No!"
Ping grabbed him around his goat neck. He struggled to get away from her.
"You must stay with me, Kai.
Ping said. Promise me you won't run off.
He stopped struggling.
Promise.
Kai stayed in his goat shape. After no more than 2×10 paces, Ping had to stop to get her breath back. She wondered how long she could walk without food or water. Then she heard voices shouting. The alarm had been raised already. She glanced back. Imperial guards were dividing into search parties. Pulling the goat with her, Ping ducked into the cover of the bamboo grove, but it was no safer there. Guards were moving through the bamboo grove as well, fanning out in all directions. Ping crouched behind a thick clump of bamboo.
It doesn't matter if the girl is killed, a voice shouted, but the dragon mustn't be harmed. And remember that it can take on disguises. It could be a bucket, a jar, or a soup ladle.
A guard strode past. He thrust his spear into the canes where Ping and Kai were hiding. The point came to rest less than a hand width from Kai's nose. The little dragon didn't make a sound.
Good boy, Kai, she said.
She could hear Imperial guards on all sides slashing down canes with their swords, thrusting their spears into the densest growth. Ping was beginning to think that the road might be safer after all. She was just about to turn towards it when a hand clamped over her mouth. Ping tried to free herself.
There is no need to be afraid, said a gentle voice behind her.
Ping stopped struggling. She recognized the voice. It was Lady Anne.
Put this on, she said, taking off the blue and gold cloak and headscarf that she was wearing.
Underneath, she was wearing a reddish gown similar to Ping's. Ping draped the cape around her shoulders and put the headscarf over her hair.
Tell Kai to turn into something you can carry, Lady Anne said.
Kai understood her words. He changed back into a basket.
More Imperial guards are coming, Lady Anne said. Go to Princess Yangxin.
Before Ping had a chance to say anything, Lady Anne started to run through the bamboo grove, slipping through the narrow spaces between the canes, darting this way and that like a startled animal. Guards came crashing past. Ignoring the girl wearing the Duke's colors and carrying a basket, they chased after the running figure. Ping stepped out into the road again, glad that the cloak and headscarf concealed her. Guards were everywhere, searching every wagon, prodding and poking every bucket and jar. She walked towards the sedan chairs and the camels that were loaded with the princess's baggage. She had to stop to rest. She put the basket-shaped dragon down for a moment near a stall selling hot food.
I found it!
An Imperial guard appeared at the stall. He had discovered a soup ladle with a handle carved in the shape of a dragon. He poked the ladle with his sword, but didn't dare pick it up. Ping couldn't see Kai anywhere. She heard sweet flute notes. Ping looked around trying to find their source. There were people and animals everywhere, but her eyes fell on one little boy. He was about 4 years old. It was her own half-brother. He looked up at her with a gap-toothed smile. Ping reached out to stroke his hair. She felt a strange sensation as her hand rested not on silky hair, but on the rough scales of a dragon. Ping stared at the boy.
But you didn't come to my family's house. How do you know what Liang looks like?
Kai see in Ping's mind.
The curtains of one of the sedan chairs were drawn aside.
Get in, Ping.
It was the princess.
Where is Kai?
Ping pointed to the child beside her. Just as Ping and Kai climbed up, the camel drivers flicked their beasts with whips. The camels set off, groaning and complaining. The bearers lifted the sedan chair. They were moving. Ping slumped back in her seat, suddenly overcome by weariness and relief. She looked across at the princess, who looked as cool and calm as ever.
Thank you, Your Imperial Majesty, she said. Kai was sniffing a basket.
Would Kai like something to eat?
He hasn't had any food since yesterday, and he's very weak.
I heard what my brother did to him, the princess said.
She opened the basket, and the smell of roasted meat wafted out.
Birdies, said Kai, popping back into his dragon shape again.
The basket contained a number of roasted quails.
Eat all you like, the princess said.
Kai didn't need further encouragement. He stuck his head in the basket and ate the quails, bones and all.
I'm afraid you will have to wait until we stop for the midday meal to eat and change your clothes, Ping.
I don't want to cause you any trouble, Ping said. Once we are away from the river, we'll make our own way.
You won't get far, the princess replied. You have serious injuries, and the weather is worsening. Come all the way to Yan with us.
I've allowed the promise of safety and comfort to lure me away from my true path too often.
You mustn't punish yourself, Ping. You have saved Kai. Heal yourself before you start on your journey. You haven't had time to decide where you are going. And believe me, Yan is not always safe or comfortable.
But what about the Duke?
You can pose as one of my servants.
Kai can be an orphan boy who I have taken on to train as a bodyguard. The Duke will have no interest in either of you. Through a gap in the hangings, Ping could see the bamboo canes march by without her having to lift a toe. She was willing to be carried wherever the sedan chair was going.
You have been so kind to me, Princess Yangxin, Ping said.
My brother has treated you and Kai shamefully, the princess said. If he hadn't been blinded by his obsession, he would know you are the true Dragon Keeper.
You believe I am?
I know you are, the princess replied. I have watched you with Kai. I have seen your devotion to him. You are injured, bleeding, but your first thought is for him.
The Emperor doesn't think I'm the true Dragon Keeper.
I have to confess that I wasn't sure at first.
What convinced you?
The princess pulled something from the sleeve of her gown. It was a strip of bamboo with characters written on it. It was the same strip that Hua had brought to her. Ping looked at the characters. To her surprise, she could read almost all of them. It was a prediction. In the second year of Emperor Wu, a new Dragon Keeper will appear. She will be shunned, but she is the true Dragon Keeper.
Ping stared at the strip.
It says she.
Yes.
It could be a mistake.
The princess shook her head.
How did you get this?
Your rat brought it to me.
But I thought you hated rats.
I do, but this one was so persistent. After he had brought it to me for the third time, I read it. It is the last strip of a book. Someone untied it so it couldn't be read.
Ping remembered when she had burst in on the Emperor and Dongfang swore when the bamboo books about dragons had first arrived from Chang'an. The Imperial Magician had been retying the strings of a book then. She looked at the strip in her hand. All the books would have been destroyed in the fire. This one strip was all that remained of them. Now there was no doubting it. All of the knowledge about dragons in the Empire was contained in her head.
You have had your doubts, Ping, Princess Yangxin said. Are you now convinced you are the true Dragon Keeper?
I know I am,
she said. I didn't need a bamboo book to tell me. In my heart, I knew.
She stroked Kai's rough scales.
I just didn't believe I could do the job properly.
Ping didn't know whether Dancer had withheld knowledge from her on purpose, or whether the old dragon had just forgotten what he was supposed to tell her. It didn't matter. No set of rules could help her. She had to teach herself. And Dancer trusted her to do that. She was the last dragon keeper, that's what he'd said. With that, he had actually told her all she needed to know. She had to end dragon's reliance on people. She had to teach Kai how to take care of himself. Accepting the Imperial Seal had been a mistake. She had allowed her affection for the Emperor to cloud her judgment. She wasn't a slave girl, but she wasn't an Imperial courtier either. She was the Dragon Keeper, the last one. She had to find a place where Kai could live in freedom. Liu Che said there was nothing that prophesied a female Dragon Keeper, Ping said. He lied to me. The princess's eyes filled with tears. His true character is good and honest. I pray that it is not lost forever.
Aren't you angry that he is sending you back to Yan? Ping asked.
The princess shook her head. I begged the Duke to take me back. Ping turned to the princess in surprise. The Duke was ready to enlist the barbarians beyond the Great Wall and prepare to wage war on the Empire. Liu Che ignored this threat. You are right, Ping. My brother is obsessed with his search for immortality.
But he's going back to Chang'an now, isn't he? The Grand Counselor will bring him to his senses.
The princess shook her head sadly. He is not going to Chang'an. He plans to sail to the source of the Yellow River, where he has heard the peaches of immortality grow. The Empire is weak already. War would bring it to its knees. It is within my power to prevent this from happening. The Duke was fond of me before my indiscretion. The sedan chair slowed down and stopped.
What's wrong? Ping said anxiously. The hangings were pulled aside and Lady Anne stepped in. There were beads of perspiration on her forehead.
One of the boxes has come loose. The camel drivers are securing it.
You lost your pursuers? The princess asked. Lady Anne smiled. They are chasing a deer. Urgent flute notes rang out.
Kai need to pee.
No, Kai, said Ping anxiously. You can't.
She remembered what had happened the last time they were traveling and Kai had wanted to pee.
Must go now.
Ping couldn't bear the thought of the princess's sedan chair flooded with foul-smelling dragon urine. We won't be long, she said to the princess. Princess Yang Xin looked puzzled, but the camels will start moving again at any moment. We must keep up with them.
Quick, Kai, Ping said. Take on the shape of Liang.
The little dragon shook his head.
Only pee in dragon shape.
Kai jumped out of the sedan chair. Ping followed him. They had traveled no more than 2 or 3 li. The road was still crowded with people who had come to see the camel caravan from Yan. Ping held out her cloak to hide the dragon.
Hurry up, she said. Won't come, Kai said sadly.
The princess peeped through the curtains to see what the delay was.
Trying, said Kai.
Your Majesty, Ping said, do you have a wine jar?
The princess nodded. She handed Ping a lovely alabaster wine jar. Ping tipped the jar and let the wine dribble out onto the road. The trickling sound did the trick.
Ping!
Said Kai triumphantly. A pool of dark green dragon urine formed on the road. Ping looked around anxiously, sure that the awful smell would attract attention. The camel drivers called out in a strange language.
The camels answered with their grunting, groaning cry and set off again.
Hurry up! Not finished.
The bearers picked up the sedan chair. There was a sudden gust of icy wind. Leaves swirled in the air. Something else was blown along by the wind. It fluttered and turned, billowing in the breeze like a miniature sail on a boat. It fluttered down and settled on a tuft of grass poking up between two stone slabs. It was the silk square. The dragon repositioned himself. A new stream of urine splashed onto the tuft of grass, soaking the silk square.
Wet, said Kai cheerfully.
Ping peered at the silk. It was changing. Faint marks were appearing on it. Despite the terrible smell, she picked up the silk by one corner. She could see pale characters on it. The marks were getting darker. The sedan chair had moved ahead. Ping picked up Kai and tried to catch up with it. Every step sent pain shooting through her body. The bearers increased their pace. The princess held back the curtains. With a huge effort, Ping managed to lift the little dragon into the sedan chair. She ran, despite the pain, but she couldn't climb up herself. Her last shoe of energy had been used up. Snowflakes started to fall. The clouds that had been threatening for over a week decided to release their burden. Princess Yang Xin reached out and took Ping's outstretched hand. She pulled Ping inside. The princess had more strength than Ping had ever imagined. Ping collapsed on the floor, gasping with pain and exhaustion. She lifted herself onto the seat next to the princess and stared at the dripping silk, which was still clutched in her hand. The marks were now dark brown. The silk square was covered with lines and curves. There were some characters, too, written scratchily with a shaky hand. Ping could read many of them. They were the names of roads, rivers, and a mountain. "What do these other two characters say?" she asked. The princess held a fold of her headscarf over her nose and looked at the silk.
"Kunlun," she answered. "The Kunlun Mountains."
"It's a map." Kai was perched on the seat between her and the princess, making high and happy flute notes.
"Message from father," he said.
"Yes," said Ping, "it's a message from Dansa, hidden behind your reverse scale. Now I know where our path lies." "Not just yet, though," the princess said. "Allow yourself some time to rest and recover." The snow was falling heavily. The countryside had turned white. "The Kunlun Mountains are impassable in winter. You must spend the winter months in Yan."
"Travel with Prissy," Kai said, happily snuffling about in the basket to see if there was any food he had missed.
It took Ping a moment to work out who Kai meant. The little dragon looked up at the princess.
"Prissy play ball?"
"No, Kai," Ping exclaimed.
"Prissy tell story?"
"No, you'll have to sit still and behave yourself all the way to Yan." Kai belched.
"Okay."
He walked round in a circle, in the space between Ping and the princess. Finally, he settled down. He coiled his scaly body into a tight knot, with his nose under his back paws and his tail pulled up through the middle. The princess smiled. So did Ping. She settled back to enjoy the peace and quiet. She knew it wouldn't last long. Acknowledgements. Once again, I am indebted to all those researchers who have written about the Han Dynasty, and scholars who have translated ancient Chinese books and made all their knowledge available to people like me. There is a full bibliography on my website at http://home.iprimus.com.au/